underwriting support for the Book Show podcast on WAMC.org comes from Northshire Bookstore, Manchester Center, Vermont, and Saratoga Springs, New York. An independent bookstore offering books, author events, gifts for children and adults, and more. Northshire.com. And from the College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering a new Bachelor of Science degree in Public Health with a focus on social, physical, and behavioral sciences. strose.edu.
Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Howard Frank Mosier is one of America's most acclaimed writers. His fiction set in the world of Vermont's Northeast Kingdom chronicles the intertwining family histories of the natives, wanderers, outcasts, and fugitives, white, Native American, escaped slaves, fleeing north, French Canadians, and others who settled in this remote and beautiful place. Set in the 1950s, his latest God's Kingdom reveals the Kinnison family through the coming of age of the heir to its rich and complicated history, Jim. Earnest and innocent, Jim is a bright student, a loving son and brother, but also curious about the unspoken trouble in the family that haunts his father and grandfather. Howard Frank Mosier is the author of 10 novels and 2 memoirs. 4 of his novels have been made into feature films. He's lived in Vermont's fabled Northeast Kingdom since 1964. His 11th novel is God's Kingdom. It is now out in paperback, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Howard Frank Mosier to this week's book show. Very nice to have you aboard,
sir. Thank you,
sir.
Joe. Pleasure to be
here. Thank you very much. I love your work. I love that you have really taken this world, this place, and made it your own. I mentioned in the introduction that you have lived there since 1964. At what point did this fabled Northeast Kingdom start to seem like home to you?
Well, I think that there was an evening soon after my wife and I arrived there when I had the equivalent of an epiphany, except that it wasn't a religious experience, but our landlady invited us to come down and have down the street and have cake and coffee with her. And she told us a story. She said that back during Prohibition and the Depression, she and her husband had owned a little dairy farm up in the mountains near the Canadian border, not far from the village where we were living. And that, like so many other farmers in New England and beyond, they were losing it to the bank. They just couldn't make enough from their milk check to pay the mortgage. So she decided that she would put to use the one piece of information that her father had passed along to her, the one thing he had taught her. She would make moonshine whiskey and save the farm with the proceeds. And so she set up a little still on the brook that ran through their property, and she made just enough of the stuff to sell in the nearby towns and keep that farm afloat. Well, one night, as she was running off the shine by lantern light, she looked up and she said that she saw across the brook a pair of city shoes with a man wearing a city suit standing in them, and she knew immediately who he had to be. He had to be a revenuer. So she said to him, you can arrest me if you want to, but I want you to know that if you do, we're going to lose our farm. And she looked back at the still, and when she glanced across the brook again, the guy was gone. Well, she and her husband somehow held on to that farm through the Depression and for many years thereafter, and ultimately, her husband died, and she kept the farm going for a few years, but it became more than she could handle, so she sold it and moved into the village. And one night, there was a knock at her door, and there stood the man in the city shoes, in the city suit. Hadn't seen him for 25 years. And she said, "Have you come to arrest me again?" And he said to her, "No, ma'am, this time I've come to marry you." And he did. And they were very happy together. Uh-huh. She had been with her first husband, but eventually he passed away. So when she finished the story, she looked at my wife and me, and she said, "Now, Howard and Phyllis, I don't want you to think I'm feeling sorry for myself. I've had a very good, fulfilling life. But I reckon I just ain't had good luck keeping my husband's alive." And at that moment, I looked at my wife, and she looked at me, and we knew that one way or another, I was going to write the stories of the Northeast Kingdom. That was my epiphany, Joe.
So for this novel, it's set in the 1950s, and it follows the life of 14-year-old Jim Kinnison, who hopes to become a writer. I hope you could read just the beginning of the novel, which sets the plate, and then we'll talk a little bit more about the story told.
All right. This is from the first chapter of the novel, which is called Blooded. In those years in God's kingdom, there was always a ridge runner. There was always one deer that was bigger, darker, and smarter, with 10 or more points on its antlers and a track 3 fingers wide and as deep as the snow was soft. Of course, there was more snow then. Back when editor James Kinnison was just Jimmy Kinnison, a boy who had not yet been blooded, it seemed that by Thanksgiving week at the latest, there was always a foot of fresh snow in the kingdom. The year Jim turned 14, they referred to the Ridge Runner as Jimmy's deer. "That old boy has your name on him, Bub," Jim's older brother, Charlie, told him. It was as though Charlie and Jim's grandfather and namesake, James Kinnison II, and Jim's father, editor Charles Kinnison, had let the runner grow to a great size so that it would be there for Jim to hunt when he turned 14. This was the usual age for a boy to be blooded in the kingdom of that era. They left for camp on Thanksgiving Day after the big meal at the Kinnison family farmhouse, heading up the river toward the Canadian border in Charlie's pickup. Their gear was in the bed of the truck, the open-sighted 30-30 deer rifles they favored in the dense woods on the mountain, their sleeping bags, an extra set of clothing. "Go light, the lighter the better," was Gramp's hunting motto. Gramp was already at the camp. Charlie and the editor and Jim would meet him there. As they bounced up the washboard road along the river toward the border, Charlie's empties rolled around on the towing chain under Jim's feet, clattering together like little glass duck pins. "My God, Charles, you ought to hoe out your rig once every decade or so," the editor said. "Why?" Charlie said. "I'm just going to give it to Jim when he turns 16. He can hoe it out then." The road ended in a brushy clearing beyond which the river widened into pond number 1. The camp boat, a former lumbering bateau painted dark green, sat upside down under a tarp in a stand of black spruce on the shore. They transferred their gear from the truck bed to the boat and started out across the open water. Charlie rowed. The editor sat in the squared-off stern. Jim sat facing backward in the bow. The surface of pond number 1 was calm and the same steel gray as their rifle barrels. Jim was excited by the prospect of hunting the Ridge Runner. He'd glimpsed it this past August when he and Gramp were fishing pond number 1 from Gramp's old town. They'd spotted the buck drinking from the pond near the collapsing logging dam across the outlet. Except for a white patch on its chest, it was as red in its summer coat as a Jersey cow, and its horns were in velvet. Jim counted 6 points on each side. The deer lifted its head and watched them for a moment as water slid off its dark muzzle into the pond. Then it made 2 long bounds and vanished into the woods. Gramp looked at Jim and nodded. That was all. But Jim knew that this was the ridge runner. Come hunting season, if he was smart enough to walk it down and shoot it, this was his deer.
Howard Frank Mosier reading from his latest God's Kingdom, which is just out in paperback. I assume it is not too much of a stretch, certainly given his career choice and his career interest, that Jim is in some way, shape, or form based on you.
He is. The key to Jim Kennison is I was years ago when I was working on my novel, A Stranger in the Kingdom, I was struggling to find the right angle of approach to it. That's the first book in what I hope will be a trilogy, God's Kingdom being the second book, and I'm working now on bringing the Kennison story up to the present in the third book. But when I wrote A Stranger in the Kingdom, it was a tough book to write. It's a story about a racist incident in the town where we live in Vermont, where you might not necessarily expect a racist incident to take place, but it did. And I worked on that book for many years without being able to really get the handle. And then one night, I wrote a sentence without really quite knowing what I was doing, and it went something like this. When I was a boy growing up in northern Vermont, my father and my older brother Charlie couldn't say one word to each other without getting into an argument, and somehow I knew I had found the voice of the young narrator of that story, Jim Kennison, and I also knew that Jimmy was probably going to be based on me, his father, the editor, based on my dad, his mother based on my mother, his mm-hmm. older brother based on my best friend. But when I got that one sentence from Jimmy's point of view and where it came from, I still don't know, Joe. I think I had Jimmy Kennison. Yeah, he is me.
And this idea of wanting to find out about the family, and I mean, that's a writer's / journalist's perspective, isn't it? To find out those secrets, to root out those things of the past, and to figure all of that out.
Absolutely, there was a murder in Jim's family involving not to give it away, some of his relatives, and he is determined to find out who committed that murder and why and how he is indirectly connected to it.
You were not born in the mm-hmm. Northeast Kingdom of Vermont. You were born in New York. You were born in the Catskill Mountains.
I was. I lived in the Catskills until I was 10, and then moved up to the Capital District and lived with my folks in Altamont for 4 very happy years, and then we moved to further upstate to a little town called Cato in between Syracuse and mm-hmm. Rochester, and that's where I spent my high school years.
So getting back to really the first question that I asked you, so moving into the Northeast mm-hmm. Kingdom, it was somewhat different, and yet there were many similarities to the remoteness. You were used to that in some ways.
Oh, yes. We were, both my wife and I were, you know, country kids, and we were looking for a place like the place where we had grown up, and we knew we'd found it on the day we drove into town, and right in the middle of the main street of Orleans, Vermont, were two guys having a fist fight. I can't believe I was ever quite this naive, but I rolled the window down and I called out, "Excuse me, but could you gentlemen please tell us how to get to the local high school? We were going to interview for teaching jobs." And the taller of the two guys said, "We can do better than that. We can take you there." And so they piled into my grandparents' old blue Super 88 Oldsmobile, which we had borrowed to drive from Syracuse to northern Vermont. And those bozos directed us all over the village and got us lost down driveways and over in the lumber yard of the Ethan Allen Furniture Factory. Finally, by chance, we got to the school, and they got out and went down the street arm in arm, laughing and joking. And as I pulled into the school parking lot, my wife, then my fiancée, Phyllis, tapped me on the shoulder, and she said, "Look back there. I looked over my shoulder. The two guys had resumed their fist fight in the middle of School Street, and Phyllis said to me memorably, "Sweetie, welcome to the Northeast Kingdom of Vermont."
I know I've heard you speak a few times about various novels, and one of the things that I know you often talk about is where fiction comes from. You also have written memoir, but this particular story of the Kinnisons, as you say, mirrors much of your life in the sense of the characters and where these people come from. Is there a contemporary element too of what you see happening in that segment of Vermont, what you see happening socially, culturally, that intrigues you as well?
Well, I think that there is a contemporary element. When my wife and I first went to the Northeast Kingdom, there were 600 family dairy farms in Orleans County.
Right.
And today there are about 60, with really very few other jobs available. And so there's just a huge outpouring, particularly of young people from the kingdom. And in some ways that strikes me as tragic, but there's simply nothing for them to do there. Jim deliberately decides to come back to the kingdom and run his dad's newspaper. Not a very lucrative endeavor. But he's determined, as I've been, to tell the stories of this place. This is also, like Stranger in the Kingdom, a story about some of the darker elements of the Northeast Kingdom, but elements that I encountered, now that I look back on it, growing up in the Catskills and Altamont and Cato and upstate New York, and including racism, which is a subtext of many of the stories in the book, and including, as it turns out, the story I read part of a few minutes ago.
What do you think of the characters and the stories that you tell is inherently Vermont, is Vermont made, if you will?
Well, I think their independence and independent-mindedness and their determination to go their own way. I couldn't begin to enumerate the number of people I've met in the Northeast Kingdom who could have gone any place and done absolutely anything they wanted to with their lives, including our landlady who made the whiskey to save her farm, but who, because they loved the Northeast Kingdom, decided to make their lives there under harder circumstances. And that's really no longer possible for most people today. If you have a teaching degree or a medical degree, you can live in the Northeast Kingdom and find a job. Otherwise, very difficult. But I think it's a love of that land. They're shaped by it to some degree, as they shape it, and a determination to live their own lives their own way in that place.
Is it a good place for a writer to live?
Well, it is. When we first arrived in the Northeast Kingdom, and I heard that story that our landlady told, I realized that what I had found in this remote little corner of an earlier New England was just a gold mine of stories that no other writer had ever told. I think Robert Frost wrote one poem set in the Northeast Kingdom, and other than that, I don't know of any fiction or literary nonfiction or poetry set in the Northeast Kingdom. So there were all of those stories for me. At 21 years old, I wasn't ready to tell those stories yet, to write them, not by a long shot, but I was ready to hear them and think about them and later on incorporate them into my own fiction.
We had your friend and mine, Richard Russo, on the program for his latest novel, which I know you had a hand in giving him the idea for his sequel to Nobody's Fool. And I asked you the question a moment ago about the things that are inherently Vermont. Rick can write about, he can write about Gloversville or Maine or other places in New England, and they have much of a quality of your writing, of what you're writing about, of the Northeast Kingdom. There is that New England vibe that goes throughout your work, which of course brings us down to the characters that inhabit these places.
absolutely. And a few years ago, and this was at a time when I was calling Rick almost monthly to hector him about writing the sequel to Nobody's Fool. Finally, he said the reason he wrote the book was so I wouldn't pester him about it anymore. But I was traveling on the New York State Thruway, not far from Gloversville, and I said, what the heck, I'll stop and I'll see this place that he wrote about. So I drove over to Gloversville, and it was interesting. It reminded me of a lot of other towns, including that little town my wife and I went to back in 1964 in Vermont. But I couldn't quite get the feel that the characters, the people from Rick's novel, were on the streets with me. Finally, I went into the library, and there in the fiction section, I found all 10 or 12 of Rick's books, and a light bulb went off in my head, and I said, aha, this is where Rick's characters and Rick's world is. It's in those books much more than it is in any real geographical locale. And I think the same thing is true. My books, my neighbors are always asking me, where's this town of Kingdom Common that you write about? And I say, well, it's an amalgamation of three or four local towns, maybe a couple of the towns I grew up in upstate New York, including Altamont, with a lot of invention thrown in. And surely they understand this, but a couple of years later, they're just as apt to ask me the same question. Where's this town? We want to go see Kingdom Come in Vermont in the books.
It also brings to mind that idea that we have of regional fiction, which is not something that is as associated with your books because of that universal tone to it.
Well, thank you. I don't object to the term regional writer because, indeed, I've written almost exclusively about one region, the Northeast Kingdom, for my whole career.
Right.
But without making egregious comparisons between myself and my betters, I would point out that a lot of the best American fiction and poetry is very highly regional and nonfiction, beginning with Walden and certainly Robert Frost's poetry and Faulkner's fiction, Flannery O'Connor's fiction, and the same is true of a great many contemporary writers as well. I've heard the term now place-based fiction used I guess that's to get away from the pejorative implications of regional fiction. But yeah, Joe, I'm a regional writer sitting right across from you. Nothing else.
Have you ever been tempted to say, okay, I want Milwaukee. Let's go to Milwaukee.
I've written a memoir set outside the Northeast Kingdom. It's called North Country, in which I follow the United States-Canadian border from coast to coast, looking for little out-of-the-way enclaves behind the rest of the country, like the Northeast Kingdom. My Lewis and Clark novel, The True Account, in which there is not one single true word, chronicles a race to the Pacific between Lewis and Clark and a very peculiar Vermonter from the Northeast Kingdom who is determined to beat them there. But I took the Northeast Kingdom character with me. And my more recent novel, Walking to Gatlinburg, is a Civil War story in which a young Vermonter, 16-year-old Vermonter, sets out walking from Vermont to Virginia, Tennessee, looking for his older brother who is missing in action. So I've gone outside Vermont a few times, but my heart is right here in the Northeast Kingdom, and that's why I came back to it in God's Kingdom.
And in the time we have left, so you still have one more story in you regarding the Kinnisons.
I do, and I probably have some more after that. And at 74, I'm going to have to pick and choose because I'm not going to be able to keep this up indefinitely. But there are more stories in the kingdom than I'm ever going to get to in my writing life.
But for the Kinnisons, you want to bring us up to present day.
I want to bring it up to the present and give some indication of what has happened in the last 50 years since God's Kingdom to these characters, based mainly on my family characters.
Well, the name of the new novel is God's Kingdom. It is published in paperback by Picador. Howard Frank Mosier, always a great pleasure. Thank you so much for being with us. What a delight to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. We enjoy hearing from our listeners about the show. You can email us at book@wamc.org. And you can listen again to this or find past book shows via podcast or online at wamc.org. Sarah LaDuke produces our program, Bookmark Us, for next week. And thanks for listening. For The Book Show, I'm Joe Donahue.